So the next few moments, we're going to sit completely still and observe any bodily sensations that may arise because of sitting still. It might be burning sensation in your knees or lower back or shoulder joints. Just observe those sensations equanimously, without aversion. Also find out if you can give auto-suggestion and see if those sensations go away. You can compare that with neutral observation of the sensations. Find out if you have any control over those sensations. Find out if you can tell them to go away as they arise.
Were like 20 eons. Those bodily sensations arise because, you know, we are not used to sitting for a long time. They also arise because thoughts are coming and going. This is also very important to understand that unpleasantness is not only arising from the position, but also from the thought process. A thought manifests as a molecule. So, if we lose our awareness, and if our mind wanders, and you go in the past and remember an unpleasant event, or if you are thinking, if you are plotting a conspiracy, if you are thinking about revenge, it will manifest as unpleasantness in the embodiment. So we have to, the reason why we have to observe that is so that we let that volitional formation come on the screen of consciousness and let it dissolve. That is purification. You see, that thought of hatred, that thought of revenge or disliking or whatever it might be, grudge, it's there in the volitional formations. It's a mental impression because you may have been mistreated by somebody in the past or you may have had some unpleasant experience, right? The stillness facilitates that thought coming from the depth of subconsciousness to the screen of consciousness. Why stillness is so important? Because we have to purge all those mental impressions that are deeply rooted in our psyche, in the chambers of our soul. We have to provide conditions so that they come to the surface and dissolve. So, unpleasantness doesn't necessarily arise only from bodily conditions, but also mental conditions. So that's why meditation is a process of mental purification. But further, we have to develop that neutrality of mind, meaning as a thought is arising, it's going to feel unpleasant. That's the nature, intrinsic nature of that thought, because it is rooted in either greed, hatred, or delusion. Those are the roots of that unpleasant thought. Another thing is the unpleasantness which came, and we did an experiment where we tried to give auto-suggestion, meaning, okay, I'm feeling unpleasant in my knees or my... Whenever I do meditation, I have unpleasantness here or in my lower back, but doesn't necessarily mean everybody has it in the same place. But when you were using auto-suggestion, were you able to get rid of that unpleasantness? Most likely not. In fact, most definitely not. You are feeling unpleasant if you say, go away, you know. Guess what happens?
It persists.
It not only persists, but it intensifies. If you have that subtlety of mindfulness, the only sure way to get rid of all the bad karma in conventional terms, or you can say the deep-rooted mental impressions, is to observe them equanimously, neutrally, as they come and go, as they arise and pass away, as they arise and cease. Constantly, consistently. That is the task of a meditator. So you're sitting there, you're observing your breath, you're refining your mindfulness, and you're observing all the sensations as they come and go. You're doing a tremendous task, incredible task there, which is the task of mental purification. That's what leads to nobility, holiness, purity of mind consciousness, greatness. That is one aspect. Another aspect is to understand that how hopelessly mind is not in our control. Yeah. During last Sunday we talked about how body is body, how breath is breath. It is not my body, it is not my breath. Similarly, with this practice, if we do it consistently, ardently, steadily, a day will come when we will experientially understand, quote-unquote, experientially understand, that mind is mind, not my mind. That's the beauty of this austerity, this training, this extraordinary effort, is that we experientially understand that just as body is body, not my body, breath is breath, not my breath, mind is mind, not my mind. When that happens, then there is non-attachment to the mind. That's the beginning of liberation. We live in the imprisonment of our own mind. And the Hollywood calls it Matrix. Right? You've seen that movie Matrix? We're constantly plugged into Matrix. Constantly driven by Matrix. And we're trying to become Mr. Anderson. Right? Unplug from the matrix and to observe it from here. That's liberation, right? I mean, it's like you're observing your own mind. It no longer rules you, but you, I don't want to say rule the world, but you transcend the mind.
Sam, is that what some call your higher self?
Sorry?
Is that what some call your higher self when you were talking about observing?
Right. There's some truth to that, that is your higher self. When you realize that you are not the body, you're higher than that. When you realize you're not the breath, you're higher than that. When you realize that you're not the mind, you're higher than that. So higher and higher self. But we are going here a step further to make it totally foolproof. We're going to realize that there is no self. So when a spiritual guru says that, awaken your higher self, we're going to do only awakening. Awakening is a phenomenon, enlightenment is a phenomenon, purification of mind is a phenomenon. There is no purifier. There is no a person who is enlightening himself. This is extremely subtle, and that's why, you know, I don't go to that, because the moment you lose the sense of self, you get scared, you know. It's like, you know, I need some support to hang on to, right? Just like as children, we always hang on to our parents. We need something. We need, okay, fine, I'm not body, I'm not breath, I'm not mind. Can I be at least consciousness, you know? Then we say, I am consciousness, right? Because that subtle greed, subtle attachment is there. And many other traditions, we hear the word soham, I am the son of God. Or because that subtle attachment to I is there. We're going to learn here that just as we're not the body, breath, mind, we're also not the consciousness. That is the ultimate wisdom. It takes effort of a lifetime, concentrated effort to also understand that the most intimate experience or phenomenon, which is the phenomenon of consciousness, is also without the self. And that's why I said there is only some truth to that when you say higher self. It is higher, higher, and higher, and higher, but it is a selfless self. If you don't want to get rid of the word self, selflessness, it's all-ness phenomenon. Because if we keep that seed of attachment, if we keep that trace of delusion, you know what happens? It can turn into expanded ego. Okay, so when somebody says, I'm the body, that's obviously a manifestation of ego, right? But when somebody says, I am consciousness, what actually can happen is he is actually expanding his ego. See what I'm saying? That he doesn't think he's body, but he thinks he is the consciousness. Soham, I am. What is that? That is expansion of ego. It's very subtle, it has to be understood experientially. And it is what ultimately leads to egolessness or enlightenment.
If there is no I, then what is left?
There is body, there is mind, and there is consciousness. When there is no I, doesn't mean there is no body, there is no mind, there is no consciousness. Body will function with its own intrinsic nature. Mind will function with its own intrinsic nature. Consciousness will function with its own intrinsic nature. And last time you were saying, when a yogi is able to control his breath, what does that mean, right? There is a phenomenon of intention or exceptional will. It's the mind that is doing it, not he. But because it is so intimate, like for example, the feeling is so